what was left behind by the devouring locusts, the swarming locusts ate. What remained over from the swarming locusts, the licking locusts then ate. Those remnants from the licking locusts, the ravaging locusts are devouring. That is Joel chapter 1, verse 4, from the Ward Green version of 2003. And it is our daily scripture for today, little children. And as we resume our study of the Ark of Urartu, we are in chapter 8, paragraph 11 today. It begins with a photo, or an illustration. I can't tell if it's a photo. For sure, I think it is a photo. See if we can... We can never be sure that it's a photo, I guess. It could be a very photorealistic artwork. But it looks like a photo. Beautiful illustration, it looks like, of a bird. See the beak on the left side with this red-colored plumage on the head. And very slender neck with a multicolored body on the back, a turquoise or green, with yellow and blue and pink on the side. The legs are rather lengthy. And this bird is standing on one leg, and its tail consists of three feathers, one of which is yellow, one of which is turquoise, and one of which is green, or lime green, as actually is the case. And the tips of the tail feathers, in every case, are also reddish pink. So that is this bird, and it's surrounded on the plate. It's a painting on a plate, a dinner plate of some kind, or a decorative plate, one or the other. But this bird is surrounded by at least three flowers, one of which is pink, one is red, one is blue. And one of its legs, specifically the one on which it's standing, is standing on something green in color. Whether it's a body, it's standing in the water, or what that is difficult to say. Something else on the left side looks like some blue fruit or something. It's hard to say what that is. Three different fruits of the same color. So resuming, or reading, but this was, by the way, that image was from Straits Chinese Polychrome Enameled Porcelain Plate, is the caption. With Feng Huang, that's not the right pronunciation, or is it? Yes, it is. Feng Huang, the Chinese phoenix design. So that bird is the Chinese phoenix. We're going to talk about that. Chapter 8, paragraph 11, 13, 22 hours. At some time, what day was this? Let's see where I wrote that. Where is it now? Oh, we have to go way back. I'm not finding any date here. Okay, March 31st, 2011 was the last date that I'm seeing here. That was mentioned in the previous paragraphs. And that date was given in gone back too far? Yeah. It was given in paragraph 8-7, March 31st, 2011. I'm looking for the date of the paragraph. Yeah. Have I turned off the heater here?
Yeah, I did.
I think I've made a mistake.
I've set this heater to run continuously.
It's now up to 92 degrees. So that was too warm. Okay. 92 Fahrenheit, which is... 28 is 82, so... 92 would be about 33 Celsius. It was right down there near the heater. Way too warm. So I'm going back to thermostatic control. Keeping it around 77 degrees at my feet. With all the other heaters shut off for the purpose of audio recording. So no fans are running. So that was, March 31st, it looks like. Now we're at 1322 hours. Osiris may be identified with Cush or with Mizraim, who is the father of Nimrod, as we have said above. And the same Mizraim may be called Menes from the two Babylons. And by the way, yesterday when I said that 2747 minus 31 was... 2726, that was wrong. It was 2716, of course. 31 years after 2747 is 2716. And that date we have talked about as being verified by some of the ancient records about the time of the beginning of the rulership of the Egyptian kingdom. We've discussed that previously, I believe in the Wild Road article, but somewhere previously we discussed it. 2716, if you search for that date, on the Will of Jehovah site, using a site, willofjehovah.com, and then the number 2716 in the Google search. Type that in, you'll find it, I'm sure. But maybe I should show you that. Let's just see. Let's go to a Google search. How do we get there quickly? Let's go duplicate tab. Google. Site. If you type in the name site, the word site, S-I-T-E. S-I-T-E colon, Will of Jehovah, with anything in quotes, such as 2716, after a space in quotes, you find, well, wrote ahead to history. Yeah, we did actually talk about that in the Wild Road article and also in the Born and Raised article, and also in Preservation. That article. So, yep, we've mentioned it for sure. Okay, let's go back. And also, 2716, 31 years after that, is also 2685, which is the beginning of the Old Kingdom. So, that number 31, the number 31 was the number that was the discrepancy in year one of the kingdom of, or the dynasty of Akkad, from 2299 to 2268. That is also 31 years, that difference that we had. So we're on to something, it looks like, with the 2747, because 2747 also, maybe I should show you. 2747... minus 62, which is twice 31, but it's also 62 is the length of the reign or rulership of Menes. Very close to that, 62 or 63, depending, I guess, on which source you're using or whatever. That's 2685 also. So when they gave that number 62, even though Menes may not have actually ruled 62 years, that's not the point. The point is that there are 62 years between 2747 and the Old Kingdom date that's given as a conventional date that has nothing to do with our chronology. So there's a connection between the 2685, which didn't come from us, and the 2747, which did come from us, and that connection is the 62 years, which is remarkable. So there's something about that 2747, it would appear. Where is it? Where's the, here it is, Egyptian chronology. Yeah. Right here, Dynasty 1, Menes 62 years, you see. But you see, there's another version of Menes, 30 years, in Eusebius, his account of Menethos' Egyptian dynasties. Africanus gave 62. So the fact that there's 30 years for Menes also, that's close to 31. So we've got the 30 and the 62 there that shows us that we might really be onto something with that 2747 date. It's so close to being perfect in its correlations. How appropriate is my late wife Anne's poem about the homesteading days on her father's farm near Delisle, Saskatchewan, the time frame being about 1930 for this event described in the poem. Mr. Dyer lit a fire in our old steam engine. My father did him hire. Of this I now make mention. Or she wrote, my father him did hire. Of this I now make mention. And Ruth Rutledge. It's a poem that she wrote I believe on the spur of the moment, but I'm not sure how long she worked on that. It's just a little way of remembering, I suppose, this short story about the name of this man, Mr. Dyer, who worked on the family farm of the Rutledge family. One property of fire is that it likes to burn upwards, and this means that it is advantageous to arrange wood so that it is standing in the way that is as vertical as possible. This is an advantage in the building of fires, and it also is something to be aware of for the prevention of fires. The fire associated with Osiris and with Nimrod is the sun of our solar system, which is about 93 million miles away. The Egyptian legend of the phoenix made fire a legend too. And the phoenix is known as far as China and Japan. Feng Huang, the Chinese phoenix, has been said to symbolize fire, the sun, justice, obedience, and fidelity. Feng is the male phoenix, with Huang the female. The name Huang Di of the Yellow Emperor, a posthumous name, is identical to Huang Di, a word meaning simply emperor, or Huang Di, a word meaning simply emperor, just to make sure I pronounce it correctly. But that's two Chinese characters. Huang Di, described or shown right here, illustrated in their graphical representations there. And the Chinese word di also means emperor. That is the word di. Huang, the first part of Huang Di, means royal. Interesting that it means royal. And this is the name of the Yellow Emperor. Huang Di, with the word Huang meaning emperor, or meaning royal, excuse me. Huang Di also means itself Yellow Emperor, but it also means simply emperor. That word Huang Di. But the part of it that's just the huang means royal, and it's pronounced the same as the word huang. The female phoenix, which is written with a table over top of the symbol for a royal. The male phoenix is also a symbol with a table on top of the symbol for the bird in Chinese. The table on top of royalty being the symbol of the female phoenix. The word huang also means yellow or pornographic, and the Zhou Two Rivers becomes one between the Euphrates, meaning good, and the yellow, meaning pornographic. Two rivers that, although greatly removed, embraced, quote-unquote, the river. Both of those rivers, the Euphrates and the Yellow, were called simply the river by the different cultures. Greatly removed from one another, as we just mentioned. Look at this. We've got this book again. The Two Babylons by Alexander Hislop. Have I even got that book? Let's see. How much time have we got here? Quite a bit. Okay. Alexander. Excuse me. Alexander Hislop, The Two Babylons. It's not... We haven't looked at that for a while, I believe. Wait a minute. It would be under Hislop. I should be looking for H. I have a feeling it might be there, but no. I've used. Okay. I've used the program for other things. Hislop, where are you? There you are. So this is page 428. Okay. It's page 428 to page 430 of that book. But what volume is it? Well, it's 1862. See if I can. Where is it? Yeah, third edition, okay. It's the third edition, 1862. Maybe we can see that. Here we go. We're getting there, page 428. Let's go down to that page. This is interesting. We have a copy of it. Not sure if the link works, but I'm going to ignore the link and just trust my copy of the book. We're near the end of the book. I went too far. Okay. What page are we on? Oh, look, page 8. Is this the appendix? No. Please bear with me here. We'll look for the, oh, those are the corrections, actually. Those are the corrections. There's page 470. Okay, so we're on the right path. Let's find out. Here we are. Much closer. 456. 439. 432. 429. 428. Okay. So, a discussion of the Hebrew chronology. Oh, the bottom, okay. We want the bottom of this page, yeah. first king of these dynasties, Menes, right? Okay, let's make this larger. Better. There we go. Yeah, so he talks about the derivation of the name Mizraim. And so that's in that book. If you're interested, it's called The Two Babylons by Alexander Hislop. This is the third edition from 1862. Should be available online somewhere for free, because it is in the public domain, being long out of copyright. So that's all for today's study of the Ark of Urartu. The official part of our study, little children. What else may we talk about? I'm trying to think. What else is there? There's always something. There's always many. There are always many things. About which we don't have time to talk every day. So I never have trouble usually finding something to talk about. It's the opposite. I have to eliminate so many things from the conversation because we just don't have time. Today I'm right now at a loss for words. Let me think. I know. It's quite something to realize. One of the things I want to mention, I'm using the microphone in the Omni mode now, so any sound coming from any direction will be picked up by the microphone, which it makes it more noise. You know, there's more noise in the signal, so I'm trying to keep the microphone closer to my mouth for that purpose of reducing the noise. It gives us the advantage of we can listen to things at the same time coming from the opposite direction, on the opposite side of the mic, which is where the speakers are located on the computer, and so on. So we have all sorts of things like that. Yeah. No, I mean, it's a real challenge, but it doesn't make sense to waste. I was talking about this yesterday or sometime recently. It's very inefficient. Maybe it wasn't yesterday. Whenever it was, I talked about this inefficiency of trying to generate, you know, enough heat to heat your whole house. And in the winter time, that's just such a waste of heat. Oh, yeah, that's right. So that was one of the things I talked about. But that means if you don't do that, you have to be able to dress appropriately for the temperatures inside your house. And that's always changing. You always have to be adjusting your clothing. So if I need to, I can take the hat off or add another hat or change what I'm wearing on my body, my vests, for example, or, you know, it's just marvelous how warm you can get a jacket or a vest if it's got down insulation. My arthritis, the little bump on my thumb, is not going away, right? But it would take more than a few days to get it to go away. The pain has quite a bit, I think, diminished, but maybe I'm being more careful to not use it. Maybe that's why You know, but I think the pain is reduced quite a lot, actually. But I have to avoid eating certain things, you know, and so I'm searching all the different things that can cause a flare-up in rheumatoid arthritis. Oh, yeah, I just remembered another thing. Thorn. God bless the souls of the people who work at Thorn and who own the company, because they're now producing, I don't know when they started, but maybe it's been available the whole time, but at least now, certainly, they're producing a liquid vitamin K2 in the MK4 form, which is without vitamin D in it. MK4 is called menatetranone, menatetranone, menatetranone. And MK4 is at one and the same time, it's been kind of controversial, because some people say MK7, which is a slightly longer molecule, is a better form. But it's only MK4 that's been shown to improve bone density. You know, but the dosage given was 45 milligrams per day, which is far more than you normally get in the supplements, in the forms that you buy them. For MK4, it just doesn't come in a concentrated enough form normally. But Thorn has produced this nice concentrated form without vitamin D in it, MK4 in a liquid. And it's quite popular. It's already been selling out. They were saying it's quite... They were low in stock when I ordered it. It was low in stock from where I ordered it, or Thorn itself was low in stock, whatever, one or the other. But yeah, I believe it's going to be very popular, because it's been shown in studies. Let's see. I even have the study here, I think. Where is it? Let's go back to this study here. Where are we? This is it here. Here it is. The two natural forms of vitamin K. And vitamin K1 is called phylloquinone, which is the vitamin K that's in leafy greens, which is the one that everybody knows, vitamin K. But it's K1, really. K2 is the form that comes from grass-fed dairy, the animals, and the milk. The meat, yeah, grass-fed meat and dairy. That's where K2 occurs in natural form. But K2, wait a minute now. Yes, I'm trying to think. K2, but there are many forms of K2 in cheeses, and it's not just MK4 and MK7. There's a different length of molecule, MK4 and MK7, but there's also MK11, and all the other ones, I think, like, are in cheeses, typically in different quantities, but MK, you name the number, it's almost there in some quantity or other in all kinds of food that is grass-fed dairy, particularly. That's the MK... It's MK anything, but that's vitamin K2. Even MK4 is found in these cheeses and so on, but not as much, I think, as in some other foods. But MK4 is, now they think it's the active form. But if we look down in here they talk about MK8 and MK9, right? Found in fermented foods. Long chain, they're called. You see, MK4 is a shorter chain. That's, the length is 4. Compared to 7 or 8 or 9. And natto beans is a fermented Japanese food that's very high in MK7, as they mentioned here in this article. But you see, this is a study, though. Two groups of female women, female subjects, and they were given either MK4 or MK7, both of which were at 420 micrograms. That's like six times the reg. Or, sorry, it's like three or four times the daily dose, 420 micrograms. In the case of MK7, the recommended daily is about 100 or 120 micrograms. So, but there's no real need for a recommended dose because it's non-toxic. So we don't worry about it. But 420 micrograms. And what did they see? Let's look at the conclusions. Yeah, I'm sure that I saw something. I guess, was that the, it's in the abstract, I think. I think that's where we want to read it, yeah. Findings, right. MK7 was well absorbed and reached maximal serum level at 6 hours after intake and detected after 48 hours after intake. MK4 was not detectable in the serum of all subjects at any time point. MK4. So from this study, they concluded that MK4 was not even effective, right? But that's at that level. But when you take 45 milligrams, which is far more MK4, it's known that it increases the bone density of people who are suffering from osteoporosis and so on. It's a phenomenal thing. 45 milligrams per day of vitamin K2 in the MK4 or menotetranone form. So I'm trying to get a higher concentration of it because I'm not sure whether my arthritis is connected with a deficiency of MK4 or MK7, but since they're both non-toxic, I can control how much vitamin D I get, but I can boost the levels of these vitamin K2 forms. And I can investigate the other long-chain forms. I can eat cheese. I can do things, you know. Somebody stopped by today and offered me meat for free. And cheese, and it was wonderful to be offered that, but I'm not eating meat because of the arthritis right now. Just one bump. It's the only symptom I have of the arthritis is one bump on my thumb, on my left thumb. That's it for today's study. Now it's December 6th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 1751 hours Canadian Eastern Time. I love you very much. Thank you so much for listening and watching. I'm Ward Green. And in my behalf, this is Sissy and this is Star. I love you very much. They're saying, in my behalf, bye for now. And this is the conclusion of our video for today. And we had been studying the article, The Ark of Urartu, today, The Orient Express. I'm obviously not at the right... There we are. There it is. It's chapter 8, paragraph 11 today. So, that's it for today. Bye for now.